lecture, one point I didn't make in the last lecture I wanted you just to be aware of is that regarding that lawsuit against the Cobb County School Board, I was actually talking on this subject or some similar subjects in Cobb County not long after the time that that lawsuit had been filed. And it was instigated by a few of the parents, especially one of them in Cobb County, and in conjunction with the ACLU. And he actually came to one of my lectures there and sat and heard some of the things that you heard in the previous lecture. And I was interested to talk with him afterwards and to see what things he had to say. I mean, this was the guy who instigated the lawsuit regarding this particular sticker. And so we sat across from each other at the meal, and he was commenting on the lecture, and he said, well, you know, I agree that textbooks, that science textbooks, have misinformation in them. And so my question to him, obviously, was, well, why did you, in conjunction with the ACLU, file a lawsuit against your school board for putting a sticker in the front of it that says, well, this textbook contains material on evolution. Evolution is not a fact, but a theory. And because he seemed to agree with that statement, he said, well, my problem is Christians were the ones who were instigating this. And if they would just be consistent in wanting truth taught in all textbooks, then I would have been okay with it. And of course, my response to that was, well, as a Christian, I certainly want truth taught in all textbooks. I mean, I don't want math books saying 2 plus 2 is 5. I want them saying 2 plus 2 is 4. I want history textbooks to teach real history and not simply a skewed misinterpretation of history. And so I was really interested by what he had to say, namely that he believed that there was misinformation in science textbooks regarding the theory of evolution, and yet he was the gentleman who originally filed with the ACLU the lawsuit against the Cobb County School Board. I freely recognize that some of you maybe have not considered some of this information before. Some of you may have not heard some of these things before. And I understand that if you haven't, especially in regard to the next two lectures, that you are going to listen to some of these things and hear some things that you may find unbelievable, that you may find just disturbing, that you may find that you've never heard anything like this before, and you may be bothered by it. And my intention, my purpose in being here this weekend is not just to needlessly ruffle feathers. It's not to present lies. It's not to try to dupe anyone in forcing anyone to believing a certain way about various things. I'm here to present some information that I believe is good evidence for a belief that many people have rejected, that is creationism, and many people have accepted evolution. I believe many of them, maybe not all, but many of them in a more of a blind fashion because they have not been, they have not received or have not maybe had the opportunity to hear some of the things that various individuals around the world, including myself, believe, and that various people have researched and studied, and that various people have been lecturing on and writing about for years. And one of those topics is what I'm going to share with you this hour. Again, I understand that maybe you've never heard some of this information. Maybe hard to accept, and that's going to be left up to you. I simply want to present this, and I want you to understand I didn't travel all the way from Montgomery, Alabama to try to deceive you in any way. I firmly believe the information that I am presenting, and I believe it's good information. But I want to begin by showing you some pictures of some creatures that young people know very well because they've seen them in their books, they've seen them on television, they have seen them in movies, they have read about them, and they're maybe their readers at school. Imagine just a young person leaving school and getting on a bus and taking a field trip with his class, maybe his second grade class, and going to a museum of natural history not far from where he lives. And he goes in this museum and he sees replicas of Oviraptor and of Brachiosaurus and Triceratops and Stegosaurus. And he looks down at the bottom and sees a placard there underneath of Stegosaurus, and he reads about the ruling of the dinosaurs and how the dinosaurs evolved back during the Triassic period that is proposed to be 225 million years ago, nearly a quarter of a billion years ago. And then after visiting this museum and learning about and reading about how long dinosaurs supposedly lived and how long they supposedly ruled. He is reminded that he read about the Triassic period in his oatmeal package earlier that morning when he read about Factosaurus and about how some of the dinosaurs evolved early on during the Triassic period. After leaving with his class, the museum that he had been visiting, we'll just say they went on a field trip, as the illustration goes, and ate at a particular fast food restaurant, got a kid's meal, where he, again, was learning all sorts of supposed facts of dinosaurs. One thing he read on his kid's meal bag was new findings show that birds are probably related to dinosaurs. I'm always skeptical when I read a big 95 red, font word fact, and then underneath it says that birds are probably related to dinosaurs. Well, after going out to eat with his classmates, he went back to school and heard his teacher read about dinosaurs and how millions of years ago dinosaurs roamed the earth. There were dinosaurs on the earth for 120 million years, but all of them had disappeared long before the first humans lived. On the last page, she read about how the last of the dinosaurs died out about 70 million years ago. Whatever happened, it's important to keep in mind that dinosaurs lived on this earth for at least 120 million years. According to the most recent discoveries, humans have lived here for only a few million years. After going home, he gets a snack, and the snack's in the shape of dinosaurs. He goes out to eat again with his parents to another fast food restaurant. We'll say both of his parents work, and so they eat out a lot. Nathan, I know you may not like that, man, but he's putting bad food into his body just constantly. So he goes and he eats at a fast food restaurant where he is reading again about dinosaurs and feathered dinosaurs. And then he goes to a bookstore with his parents and he sees an entire bookcase that's just dedicated to the study of dinosaurs. I mean, how many animals do you know that get an entire bookcase? Well, dinosaurs do, not so much bears and penguins and aardvarks, but dinosaurs get a lot of space oftentimes in the bookstore. Well, he picks out one of the books, The Magic School Bus and the Time of the Dinosaurs. A lot of kids are familiar with the Magic School Bus series. He takes it home and reads to his parents about how dinosaurs were on Earth 1,500 times longer than humans have been so far. No person ever saw a dinosaur. When early humans appeared on Earth, dinosaurs had already been dead for millions of years. And so this is what this young person is taking in throughout the day, that dinosaurs lived millions and millions of years ago, that humans never lived with dinosaurs, never saw dinosaurs. It seems to me, more than anything I have ever seen, that dinosaurs are the poster children of evolution. What I mean is, I've never seen anything that is taught about evolution to kids more than dinosaurs. I believe that dinosaurs are to evolution what the duck is to Aflac. I believe what the gecko is to Geico, in a way, that dinosaurs are to the theory of evolution. I believe that, Jared Fogle, who's been kind of a spokesman for Subway for several years now, the guy who I think weighed something like 400 pounds and now he's shrunk down to maybe 200 or less, he's been a poster child of Subway. Well, dinosaurs have been the poster children of the theory of evolution for many years now. In fact, in this textbook that I have here, I have a picture on it on the screen behind me, called Evolution, Change Over Time, that we read from a little bit in the last lecture, you will find dozens, literally dozens of pictures of dinosaurs throughout this 100-page textbook, approximately, give or take a few pages with the index and glossary and so forth. You will find several images, pictures, illustrations, that is, of dinosaurs throughout the book. You will find several pages where the dinosaurs are talked about, including just the last few pages of the book, pages 96, 97. Jack Horner, probably the world's most famous fossil dinosaur hunter, had a two-page spread there kind of about him, and the last five pages, basically, there deal with dinosaurs. In this 100-page textbook on dinosaurs, at least 32 of the pages in a textbook on evolution, at least 32 of the pages have either pictures or information about dinosaurs on them. And so I believe this is an example of how dinosaurs have been used to teach the theory of evolution, and this is just one example of many that could be given approximately right at one in every three pages. And this textbook on evolution had either pictures or information about dinosaurs. You know, Daniel Dennett is one of the world's more well-known evolutionists. He wrote a few years ago about parents, and he wrote concerning parents who teach their children something other than evolution. And this is what he stated in his book, Darwin's Dangerous Idea. He said, "Those of us who have freedom of speech will feel free to describe your teachings as the spreading of falsehoods and will attempt to demonstrate this to your children at our earliest opportunity." What Daniel Dennett was saying was, hey, those of you who do not hold to the theory of evolution, who believe in God and creation, he said, we, as atheistic evolutionists, we are, what does he say? Well, those of us who have freedom of speech, which I guess he seems to be implying there that we don't, will feel free to describe your teachings as the spreading of falsehoods or lies, and will attempt to demonstrate this to your children at our earliest opportunity. Well, I believe that as a Christian, that we have a responsibility to teach our children the truths about Christianity. I firmly believe we ought to expose our children, to teach our children about the theory of evolution. What does the theory say? What are the so-called proofs of evolution? Now, we shouldn't just, you know, keep them from ever finding out about things like that. That, to me, that seems very anti-educational, and it doesn't seem like it would be very helpful to a kid who's going to face all of these kinds of things. Well, he said, those of us who have freedom of speech, we're going to reach out to your kids at a very early age and tell them what you've been telling them is wrong. And my point in showing you this quotation is I believe that many evolutionists have reached out to kids more with dinosaurs than any other thing to try to convey the idea of evolution. Here is a pop-up book that was given to me some years back that deals with the theory of evolution. This is a pop-up book. Now, pop-up books obviously are for, you know, a hardback pop-up book. It's for young children, toddlers, 2, 3, 4-year-olds. Called Life on Earth. And the book goes through how life began in the oceans, and then you had fish that evolved into amphibians and small reptiles and dinosaurs and mammals and man. That's the entire book. Basically goes through each page, a little pop-up of an amphibian, a little pop-up of a dinosaur, a pop-up of a mammal, a pop-up of a human. The back of the book says, millions of years ago, life on Earth started in the oceans, then it moved onto land and eventually led to you. Now, my point again in showing you this book is to say, here is a book for little kids on the theory of evolution, and they have tried to, you know, sell the book. On the cover, here's an illustration of a dinosaur with a baby on his head there. Well, I believe that dinosaurs are the poster children of evolution. And though some may say, well, Eric, why are you talking about this subject? This seems very strange. Why even deal with this subject? Because if you're going to deal with evolution, I think you ought to deal with this subject because it's used more than anything I've ever seen to try to teach the theory of evolution. Not only that, in National Geographic a few years ago, just to show you, you know, how clear young people are being taught about this subject, it's being discussed that no human being has ever seen a live dinosaur, and people are encouraged to use this GeoGuide page to help capture the interest of young readers to stimulate discussion with them. I think that young people are getting taught about dinosaurs and evolution all around them, and I think it's only right for allow them to see some other information than just what they may be receiving in school or in National Geographic. In a recent email that we received where I work, one woman wrote about evolution and her teenage son, and she said, you know, this is so scary. I'm battling this with my 15-year-old right now. I should have started earlier, but the things that affected me don't affect him, and vice versa. Dinosaurs were the beginning of our problems. I'm so afraid of losing him to the world. I take from this that what she meant was her son was being taught that dinosaurs evolved from smaller reptiles, that had evolved from amphibians, that had evolved from fish, that had evolved from worms, and that humans and dinosaurs are separate in time by many, many years, millions of years. And this somehow proves the general theory of evolution and so forth and so forth. So here is a parent who says, this started with me and my children with the discussion on dinosaurs. Another reason to discuss this issue is because even evolutionists themselves have admitted how tied in to the theory of evolution the subject matter of dinosaurs is. in Dr. Philip Kitcher's anti-creationist book titled Abusing Science, The Case Against Creationism, which renowned evolutionist Stephen Jay Gould called a brilliant book, he claimed that solid evidence for the coexistence of dinosaurs and humans would shake the foundations of evolutionary theory because, of course, the dinosaurs are supposed to have been long extinct by the time the hominids arrived on the scene. So here's an evolutionist, and I'm just showing you this quote to say, he said if it could ever be proven that dinosaurs, you know, lived more recently and humans actually lived with them sometime in the distant past, then you would have shaken, he says, the foundations of evolutionary theory. You know, I've had some people who didn't like to deal with the subject of dinosaurs and had come to the conclusion that dinosaurs never existed. Well, I believe that's a very, very unwise approach to take on this subject because there's evidence that these creatures once lived on this earth. There, you can go into museums all around the world and find fossil specimens of dinosaurs. Now, many of the museums have replicas of those fossils, but there are dinosaur fossils that have been found on every single continent in the world. Okay? How do we know about woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and dodo birds and animals that have now been extinct? Well, partly some by stories, the dodo bird, for example, and also because of a lot of fossils around the world. And so it would seem very unwise to me to think that dinosaurs never lived because you can go to the Dinosaur National Monument on the Colorado-Utah border and see where there are hundreds of dinosaur bones that are jumbled together there to know that here is evidence of remains of creatures that once lived on this earth. Now, if humans ever saw these creatures, and again, I totally understand that if you are not a Christian or not a creationist, you know, you may think that this is approaching lunacy here, but I beg you to hang with me through this lecture and the next lecture as well. But if humans ever lived with these creatures, ask yourselves, if they saw them, what might they have left behind for us? What I'm getting at is this. I've gone to many places around the world, and I've talked to people about where I've been, and I've maybe had some people who have doubted, you know, that this ever happened in my life or that ever happened. One time I was in Alaska and I had seen a video about a moose stomping someone to death, and not long after that I was riding my bike in Anchorage, went very close to a moose who started chasing me, and I just feared for my life, thinking I was about to die. Okay, you know, normally before I had lived up there for a few months, I never thought about, you know, getting chased by a moose and dying. Well, you know, I can tell a story about that, but if I had a picture of that moment, that might be a little more convincing to you that that actually happened to me. It actually did. My point is, we oftentimes take pictures of places we have been to maybe show our family members or friends, you know, where we have been, what we have seen. And I think it's logical to conclude that if humans ever did live with these creatures in the past, in the distant past, then they would have attempted not to take pictures with Polaroid 35mm digital cameras, obviously, but would have maybe drawn pictures of them or carved pictures of them. And some of the slides I'm about to show you, you may have never seen. Some of you may have seen. I know Don, who's one of the full-time preachers here, that he has seen some of these things close up, and he has been to some of these places, one of them that we're going to discuss here in just a few moments. But I want to take you over about the next 30 minutes here before our meal, is that right? That starts about 5 o'clock. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready to eat, folks. I'm looking forward to that. But I want to take you to the Natural Bridges National Monument. It's located in southeastern Utah, about 40 miles of Blanding, Utah. It may be that you've been there before. It's a very interesting place to visit. They have two of the three largest natural bridges in the world there at Natural Bridges National Monument. At Kachina Bridge, right here, one can see numerous petroglyphs and pictographs that date back to the time of the Anasazi Indians, who the experts say lived there between about 400 A.D. and 1400 A.D. I don't know, Don, if you'll want to pull the lights down into more than this. You can use your judgment on that, but I have a few pictures of some of the rock carvings and rock paintings that are there at Natural Bridges National Monument. I think most people can see this and conclude that it's probably a carving, an attempt to carve a human figure. This, most people, I think, could say is an attempt to draw some kind of animal, probably some kind of wild goat or ibex. Here, these are painted what? hands. I was showing this picture to a group of kids some time ago and asked them what that was, and they said those were turkeys. That was interesting. I guess it was close to Thanksgiving time. I'm not really for sure. So there are a lot of different, I just show you these few pictures to say there are a lot of different images that are carved onto the walls there at Natural Bridges National Monument, a lot of paintings that are there. But one of the most curious ones that we saw during our visit was just to the right of this human carving. And it is this carving right here. That's kind of hard to see. I'm going to outline it for you in the PowerPoint program, and I'll blow it up for you here in just a moment so that you'll know I'm not just making this up. At least I hope so. But here is a creature that I think most people would understand, would see and think, well, it doesn't look like any modern animal that's living today. I mean, it doesn't look like a giraffe. It doesn't look like a dog. It doesn't look like a horse. Well, what does it look like? Well, I could quote several creationists who would tell you what they think it looks like, but I want to quote a couple of evolutionists who are not just evolutionists, but they're experts in the field of rock art. One of those is Fran Barnes. And by the way, this is kind of a blown-up picture of that. Fran Barnes, who's an evolutionist and recognized authority on rock art, he wrote a book titled The American Canyon Country, Prehistoric Indians, Their Culture, Ruins, Artifacts, and Rock Art. We have this book in our library from back in 1979. And this was a statement that Fran Barnes made about this particular piece of rock art. He said, there is a petroglyph in Natural Bridges National Monument that bears a startling resemblance to a dinosaur, specifically a brontosaurus with long tail and neck, small head, and all. Now, brontosaurus is another name for the dinosaur called Apatosaurus. Brontosaurus is the more popular name. Apatosaurus is the more, I guess, scientifically accurate name. But the same animal has oftentimes been labeled with both names, Brontosaurus and Apatosaurus. And here is a man who could have, in his book, said, yes, it may have looked like that, but actually it's this over here. He could have said, based upon his expertise in this subject, well, this was a carving that obviously was done in the last 10, 20, 30, or 40 years, and so it's not a legitimate carving from the period of when the Anasazis lived in this area of what is now the United States. He did not, but what he did go on to say was that this is an animal that bears a resemblance. He says a startling resemblance to a dinosaur. And I fully believe that if you had never seen this picture before, and that most people who've never seen it, who see it for the very first time, would have to admit it looks very, very, very similar to a dinosaur. I've shown this picture to various people, I think, for the first time, who have said repeatedly, looks like a dinosaur, it looks like a dinosaur. Well, the point is, if humans were able to draw such accurate pictures, carvings of dinosaurs, before we began to learn about dinosaurs in the 1800s, you see, the term dinosaur did not even exist until the 1840s. And so the first dinosaur bones were being found in modern times in digs beginning in the 1820s when iguanodon fossil was found and later named iguanodon. And then a few years later, the name dinosaur was actually coined. That was in the early to mid-1800s. But what we have learned is that there are images of very convincing, I believe, representations of these long-neck, long-tailed creatures that go back hundreds, if not thousands of years before that. And here is one evolutionist who claims that this bears a startling resemblance to dinosaurs. Dennis Slifer, an evolutionary geologist, wrote a book titled Guide to Rock Art of the Utah Region in the year 2000, commented on the same piece of rock art, in which he said one of the most curious designs is a petroglyph that resembles a dinosaur, which is apparently of Anasazi origin based on its patination. Based upon the pecking of the rock, based upon the natural desert varnish that is covering this a petroglyph that only really comes along over time, based upon this geologist and rock art expert, he believes that this is, based upon his understanding and knowledge of rock art and of the patination within the rock art, he believes this is of Anasazi origin, which means has to be several hundred, if not more than 1,000 or more years old. And notice he says, it is a petroglyph or rock carving that resembles a dinosaur. In fact, in his book, this is how he had that particular rock art illustrated. Again, these are not creationists. These are evolutionists who have said, yeah, we've seen this. I'm not telling you that these men believe that that dinosaurs lived in recent times. I'm telling you, this is what they said in their books. And if I remember correctly, there were no other explanations as to why this could be the case. And my point is that this bears a startling resemblance indeed to some of the dinosaurs that scientific illustrators have drawn in recent times based upon some of the fossils in the fossil records, some of the dinosaurs that they named Cetiosaurus and Mosasaurus. Interestingly, when I asked a staff member at Natural Bridges National Monument Visitor Center, after we visited Kachina Bridge there in Natural Bridges National Monument, how scientists and those knowledgeable in rock art explain the dinosaur petroglyph. You know, how do they explain this? In fact, before we even asked her, really, she asked us, did you see that interesting piece of rock art down there? And we said, yes. You know, how do evolutionists explain this? Her answer was, they don't really want to. That was her answer. And I didn't have a tape recorder at that time with me, but as soon as I got through talking to her, I went right back. I take research and writing very seriously. I went right back to the truck that we had and wrote down as much as I could remember that she told us. She worked there at Natural Bridges National Monument, seemed to be very much an expert on the ways of the Anasazi Indians. And she said that statement. She went on to say, it was too early to be a horse. Now, I can only assume that she made that statement because she thought maybe to her it looked like it possibly could have been a horse. Would have been a very kind of odd-looking horse, but I'm not a very good illustrator, so maybe I wouldn't draw one that well either. I don't know. But you may recall that horses, she said, well, she didn't say this, but I understood this to mean, this couldn't have been a horse because the Anasazis lived there and left that area of what is now Utah long before the Spaniards brought the horses to the Americas. So she said, well, this couldn't have been a horse. It was too early to be a horse. She did say, some people think it's really a picture of a dinosaur, but they are crazy. Well, I didn't tell her at that time that I thought it looked like a dinosaur, but I found her perspective on the matter to be, to be interesting, to say the least. She indicated, and this is not where the quote starts here, but she later talked about how there are petroglyphs in this area that do resemble mammoths. I found that to be interesting that she would call some of the petroglyphs that were there or rock carvings to be what appear to be mammoths. No mammoths living today in America and around the world, but apparently they lived there at one time because they were drawing them. So the petroglyph at Kachina Bridge may be just some monster that the Anasazis carved onto rock. And my belief is, yes, that this was some monster, if you want to call it that. It just looked like a long-neck, long-tail dinosaur. It just so happens that Apatosaurus fossils, were discovered in Blandin, Utah over 40 years ago and currently are on display at the Dinosaur Museum in Blandin, Utah. So we know that these animals once lived there. Here are some ancient Indians who lived there more than 1,000 years ago who carved images on rocks that look like, at least one of them, look like some kind of long-neck, long-tail dinosaur. I want to leave the southwestern part of the United States for just a moment and go over to the country of Cambodia and show you one of the temples in Cambodia that was built between AD 700, or actually many of the temples there, in the some of the Angkor temples from the Angkor days, society, culture, civilization. Many of them were built during this period from AD 700 to AD 1300. This is a picture of the Ta Prohm Temple. The Ta Prohm Temple was kind of made more famous in recent times. I mean, it's a famous temple regardless if it wasn't in this particular movie, but there was a movie that came out a few years ago called, what was the name of the movie? I can't remember at this time. It's not the Raiders of the Lost Ark. There was a woman who played in it. Tomb Raider, yes. Is that right? Angelina Jolie, I believe, plays in that movie. I'm not necessarily recommending that movie. I'm just saying this temple was shown in that movie. This is the Ta Prohm Temple. And this temple was built, they believe, by Jayavarman VII back around the 11th or 12th century A.D. When you go into this temple, and I've had a couple of different friends who have been there. I actually haven't, but some of these pictures came from one of the gentlemen who was there. When you go into the Ta Prohm Temple, at the corner of the south wall of the porch and the east wall of the main body of the kapura of this thing here, is a 10-foot column right here, covered with decorative circles. Now, this temple is hundreds and hundreds, about 1,000 years old. And it has a lot of different carvings in it of a lot of different kinds of animals. Here's a picture of what I think most people would conclude to be a lizard. There are images, or there are carvings of not just birds, but you can tell that they were trying to carve swans. You can see carvings of parrots. You can see carvings of monkeys, carvings of a lizard, carvings of what appear to be some kind of a cow, or maybe a water buffalo with his head kind of tilted to the side. But I have to say, hands down, the most compelling of all of the carvings that I have ever read about or seen pictures of at the Tal Prom Temple is one that was just below this one here. I showed this picture to a group of middle schoolers a year or two ago and just asked them what they thought this was. To the best of my knowledge, they had never seen it before. And I asked them, I said, what do you think this is? And they said, every one of them, everyone in the class, and I had shown them a lot of different pictures before this time. I wasn't trying to, you know, get skewed results or anything like that. I just wanted to know, hey, what is this? And they said, well, that's a picture of a dog, and that looks like a carving of a cow, and that looks like a painting of a goat. And then I showed them this one. Every single one in the class said either, generally speaking, hey, it looks like a dinosaur, or more specifically, they say it looks like a what? It looks like a stegosaurus. I have never read, and I believe I'm fairly well read on this subject. I'm not on every subject, but I think I am on this subject. I try to read a lot of what evolutionists have said and what creationists have said. And I have never read where evolutionists have alleged that this is a farce or a fake, that it was a carving that was somehow done in the last few hundred years or the last 150 years. No geologist that I know who has been there, no rock art expert has ever said that, well, someone stripped out this rock from this area and then put new rock on it and then carved new rock and so to make it look more like a dinosaur that we've learned more about in modern times. No, that hasn't been what the critics have said. What the critics have said and what I have read is they simply claim that this doesn't look like a stegosaurus. I'm kind of amazed by that claim because I fully believe when you ask the average person on the street who has seen images of dinosaurs and of stegosauruses, and they see this for the first time, everyone I've ever approached with it said this looks like a dinosaur, specifically a stegosaurus. Furthermore, it's not like that people who were living 1,000 years or more ago that they were necessarily trained as scientific illustrators as people are today. What's more, they were drawing or carving into rock, and they weren't just drawing on a mere piece of paper. The criticisms have been, well, the head of this triceratops is, the stegosaur is too big, and the tail doesn't have the tail spikes, and so this is not a stegosaurus. That's what they have alleged. And my response to that is simply that I have received a lot of different pictures from people, colorings from kids who have seen all sorts of images of dinosaurs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that when they draw them, they're always going to be scientifically accurate. And we might laugh at some of these little colorings and stuff, but if I gave all of you a piece of paper and pencil and crayons today, it may be that you couldn't do a whole lot better than what some of the young people were doing who colored some of these pictures for me. Not only that, when you consider that this is what a triceratops looks like, according to some of our scientific computer-generated illustrators, what they say, and that a young person who has obviously seen many triceratops in picture form through the years draws a triceratops like this, it shouldn't be too hard to believe that someone carved this 1,000 years ago or more of an animal that we say today looks something like this. What's more, we need to keep in mind that a lot of the replicas that we see of dinosaurs, they're based on very few fossils. I read in, I believe it was the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences Journal, PNAS is what it's normally, I believe, called, an article in that journal a few years ago where they said that 45% of all dinosaurs that have ever been named are named after only finding one fossil specimen of the dinosaur. One. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if there are a lot of replicas in there, a lot of duplicates, But why would that be the case? Well, I can only think that, you know, people get more notoriety when they come up with a new kind of dinosaur. In that same article, they said that 74%, nearly 75% of all dinosaurs are named based upon five fossil specimens or less. And my understanding is there aren't a lot of fossil specimens of the skull and the head area of Stegosaurus. So maybe this is exactly what the Stegosaurus looked like, but my contention is that doesn't mean this couldn't be it just because the one drawn here has a larger head and no tail spikes. Furthermore, let me say this, and I personally believe this is a powerful piece of evidence that people have ignored through the centuries and in recent times. They don't consider this, at least very often. But again, the allegation is, well, the carving that we saw there in the Ta-Prohm temple doesn't look like a stegosaur because the head is a little too big and there are no tail spikes. Interestingly, I guess I use that word too much, but a lot of these things I find interesting, okay? I was given a toy dinosaur. Actually, my children were given a toy dinosaur a few years ago. And it was one of those toys that was in an egg. You know, it was one of those toys where you put the egg in the water and the egg, it dissolves and the dinosaur kind of expands and it looks like a dinosaur's hatching. I mean, they've got some great toys for kids these days, and a lot of them have to do with dinosaurs, and my kids love them. Well, we were given one of those, and when the dinosaur finally hatched, this is what it looked like. Do you know what the toy makers called this? The toy makers called it a Stegosaurus. But notice, you know, it's kind of got a bigger head than what it should have and no tail spikes here. But this is a toy Stegosaurus. And pretty much everyone understands that. That's what it's marketed as. Well, if we can understand that's a Stegosaurus today, I don't understand why people wouldn't know very easily that that sure resembles what scientists tell us the Stegosaurus once looked like. In a couple of different books about the temples there in Cambodia, Claude Jacques and Michael Freeman commented on this particular piece of rock art. And these guys, from what I can tell, they didn't have, you know, they weren't trying to impress upon people the ideas of evolution or creation. They simply mentioned a lot of the things found in the temples, and this was one of the rock carvings they mentioned. And they talked about how roundels on pilasters on the south wall, on the south side of the west entrance, are unusual in design, in particular, an animal which bears a striking resemblance to a stegosaur. This is in their 1997 book. Notice the similar language to that of Dennis Slifer that we quoted earlier, and of Fran Barnes, striking resemblance to a Stegosaurus. In one of their other books, dated from the year 1999, they talked about this again, being among the vertical strip of roundels there at the on the south wall of the porch and the east wall of the main body of the Kapura. They talked about how there is even a very convincing representation of a Stegosaur. And my belief is that people saw these creatures hundreds, thousands of years ago, and that they saw them and they drew what they saw, just as oftentimes today we take pictures of the things that we see. We're going to go ahead and we're going to finish over the next, hopefully, 10 or 15 minutes here. But I hope that I'm going to go ahead and try to plug the next lecture. I hope that you will be here for the final lecture tonight, which will start at 7 o'clock. Is that right? Because really there's a second part of this story that I think that people need to hear and that I think helps bring things together. But let me take you now to the country of Europe, to the Carlisle Cathedral in Carlisle, England, where there is a tomb of Bishop Richard Bell that is a 500-year-old tomb. Okay? People have walked across this tomb for nearly five, or right at about five centuries. Well, there is a narrow piece of brass going along the tomb here. That's about 9.5 feet long, that runs around the edge of Bell's tomb with engravings of various animals, including the fish, an eel, a dog, a pig, and a bird. A lot of different kinds of animals. One of the engravings is a creature that looks very similar to a long neck. Well, you can't see it very well because it's been rubbed off. Long tail creature. Let me blow it up here to see if you can see it just a little bit easier. A long neck, long tail animal that looks, long tail animal that looks like it's interacting with some other kind of animal, perhaps the same kind, I don't know. Now, again, what I have tried to do through my studies and research and the colleagues who work with me on this material, we have tried to see, well, we want to know what the evolutionists have to say about these things. And I think I have a quotation here on the next slide from skepticwiki.org in regard to what some have stated about this. After passing off the animal on the left as some kind of big cat, kind of an odd-looking cat, but one particular skeptical website said, the animal to the right, though, does look rather like a quadrupedal dinosaur than any other sort of animal past or present. Again, this is a quotation from a pro-evolutionary website. The skeptics also acknowledge the unlikelihood of the engraving being a hoax, saying, in the case of Bishop Bell's dinosaur, notice they even called it a dinosaur, there is no corresponding profit motive or any other apparent motive, and also any tampering with the tomb would have been done in situ, that is, in Carlisle Cathedral, and it is hard to see how a hoaxer could have gone about his work unobserved. And again, these are just comments from that website. I got these off of that website probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I don't know if they're still on there or not, but they were at that particular time. Let me take you down to Ica, Peru for just a moment. Don was telling me just yesterday that he has been to Ica, Peru, and he has been to the collection of stones that were discovered back in from the 1930s on by a man by the name of Javier Cabrera Darque. He wrote a book titled The Message of the Engraved Stones of Ica. And so my understanding, talking with Don last night, that I have not been there, have not seen these stones, but he's seen some of them firsthand. There are thousands of stones that Javier Cabrera, my understanding is, his father and others found for several decades from the 1930s on. Thousands of these stones. Many of the stones just picture various kinds of vegetation, various kinds of animals, fish and birds and so forth. Some of them are displayed. Some of those kinds of stones are displayed in various museums there in Peru. Over 11,000 Ica stones, have been found in Peru since the 1930s. And they were found in graves and burial grounds of, my understanding is, pre-Inca or Inca Indians. Now, some of the stones, in fact, from what I understand, about a third of all the stones that were found had creatures carved on them that look like these. You know, here is what modern scientists tell us the Stegosaurus would have looked like based upon their understanding of the fossil record. Here are a couple of the stones that were in the magazine Creation Ex Nihilo a few years ago that were submitted by Dr. Dennis Swift, who I understand lives up in the Portland area. He's been down there and seen these things and has some of the stones in his possession. Now, I imagine that people, you know, wonder, well, are these stones legitimate? Are the carvings on them? How do we know they weren't done in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20, or 30 years? And I believe this is one indication that these stones are, these carvings are of antiquity, of ages gone by those who lived in this area of the world. And it is that several of the stones have Diplodocus-like dinosaurs, that is, long neck, long-tailed dinosaurs, that have dermal frills on them, which was something never reported and verified by scientists before the 1990s, that have dermal frills on them. I mean, long-neck, long-tailed dinosaurs. Not reported, not understood by the fossil record until the early 1990s. In fact, here is a quotation from Stephen Cherkis, who ran the museum in Blanding, Utah, that I visited some time ago. He wrote about this in Geology Magazine in 1992 about the dermal frills and how they were first found in modern times in 1992 during examination of fossilized remains of sauropods. In this article that he wrote called New Look of Sauropod Dinosaurs, this evolutionary paleontologist Stephen Cherkis wrote, recent discovery of fossilized sauropod or diplodocid skin impressions reveals a significantly different appearance for these dinosaurs. The fossilized skin demonstrates that a median row of dermal spines was present. Some are quite narrow, others are broader and more conical. This is how he had it illustrated in his dinosaur museum in, I believe it actually is in Blanding, Utah. Notice here are the dermal frills he talked about that were discovered in 1992, in the fossil record. He said some are quite narrow, others are more broad. Well, not all of the long-necked, long-tailed dinosaurs that we once thought pretty much all had smooth necks, smooth backs, and smooth tails were that way. We now know from the fossil record that some, perhaps many of them, had these dermal frills on them. And we've only learned this from the fossil record, according to evolutionary paleontologist Stephen Cherkis and others, since 1992. Concerning sauropod dermal spines, these frills we're talking about, found in the Howe Dinosaur Quarry in Wyoming in 1992, geologist Ellen Morris Bishop wrote this. This is from the Oregonian, by the way. Is that how you pronounce it? The biggest spines found were about 9 inches long, shaped a little like a shark's dorsal fin. The smallest at tail tip were about 3 inches long. Notice, shaped a little like a shark's dorsal fin. I believe that the ancients carved these stones based upon what they had seen, and that they carved them so accurately that we didn't understand how accurate they were until the early 1990s. Figurines of dinosaurs have been found in Acambaro, Mexico. Many hundreds of these things. And if you would like to know more about this subject matter, I believe we have the book, The Dinosaur Delusion, in the back, where this is discussed in detail. How many of those do we have? We still have some in the back?
Yeah.
Okay. So you might want to look. We've got actually two entire chapters that deal with some of this kind of evidence that we believe points to a time when humans once lived with and saw and interacted with creatures and made Roman murals like this of long neck creatures that resemble dinosaurs more than any other creature that we've ever seen or heard of that once lived. On a Mesopotamian cylinder seal that was written about in 1969 that goes back thousands of years ago, you have images of creatures with long necks and long tails that were somewhat similar to some of the images that we see today. I think that is all of the slides that I have for us in this hour. Don may give us some directions here in just a few moments. Let me encourage you. I know you still may have some questions. I hope that you'll stay and eat with us. I hope that you will come back for the next lecture that we have tonight. And please, I hope that you understand that the information that I've given has been given in good faith. And what I mean is, you know, I don't get paid to go around the country to try to deceive people. I'm trying to get out information to people, and our organization tries to, that we believe is truthful, that is honest, that is legitimate, and that people ought to hear about and be able to hear about and make up decisions for themselves what they believe about such. In the next lecture, we're going to talk more about what the Bible has to say about this subject, as well as what history has to say about the subject, and what I believe to just be kind of good common sense understanding about some of these matters.